Everybody, welcome back. And here is The Lightning Thief, Chapter 7. My dinner goes up in smoke. Word of the bathroom incident spread immediately. Wherever I went, campers pointed at me and murmured something about toilet water. Or maybe they were just staring at Annabeth, who was still pretty much dripping wet. She showed me a few more places, the metal shop where the kids were forging their own swords, the arts and craft forum where satyrs were sandblasting a giant marble statue of a goat man, and the climbing wall, which actually consisted of two facing walls that shook violently, dropping boulders, sprayed lava, and clashed together if you didn't get to the top fast enough. Finally, we returned to the canoeing lake, where the trail led back to the cabins. I've got training to do, Annabeth said flatly. Dinner is at 7:30. Just follow your cabin to the mess hall. Annabeth, I'm sorry about the toilets. Whatever. It wasn't my fault. She looked at me skeptically. I realized it was my fault. I'd made water shoot out of the bathroom fixtures. I didn't understand how, but the toilets had responded to me. I had become one with the plumbing. You need to talk to the Oracle, Annabeth said.
Who?
Not who, what. The Oracle. I'll ask Sharon. I stared into the lake, wishing somebody would give me a straight answer for once. I wasn't expecting anybody to be looking back at me from the bottom, so my heart skipped a beat when I noticed two teenage girls sitting cross-legged at the base of the pier, about 20 feet below. They wore blue jeans and shimmering green t-shirts, and their brown hair floated loosely around their shoulders as minnows darted in and out. They smiled and waved, as if I was a long-lost friend. I didn't know what else to do. I waved back. Don't encourage them, Annabeth warned. Naiads are terrible flirts. Naiads, I repeated, feeling completely overwhelmed. That's it. I want to go home now. Annabeth frowned. Don't you get it, Percy? You are home. This is the only safe place on Earth for kids like us. You mean mentally disturbed kids? I mean not human. Not totally human, anyways. Half-bloods. Half human and half what? I think you know. I didn't want to admit it, but I was afraid I did. I felt a tingling in my limbs, a sensation I sometimes felt when my mom talked about my dad. God, I said. Half God. Annabeth nodded. Your father isn't dead, Percy. He's one of the Olympians. That's crazy. Is it? What's the most common thing that gods did in the old stories? They ran around falling in love with humans and having kids with them. Do you think they changed their habits in the last few millennium? But those are just... I almost said miss again. Then I remember Chiron's warning that in 2,000 years, I might be considered a myth. But if all the kids here are half-gods, demigods, Annabeth said. That's the official term. Or half-bloods. Then who's your dad? Her hand tightened around the pier railing. I got the feeling I just trespassed on a sensitive subject. My dad is a professor at West Point, she said. I haven't seen him since I was very small. He teaches American history. He's human? What? You assume it has to be a male god who finds a human female attractive? How sexist is that? Who's your mom, then? Cabin 6. Meaning? Annabeth strained. Athena, goddess of wisdom and battle. Oh, I thought. Why not? And my dad? Undetermined, Annabeth said. Like I told you before, nobody knows, except my mother. She knew. Maybe not, Percy. Gods don't always reveal their identities. My dad would have. He loved her. Annabeth gave me a cautious look. She didn't want to burst my bubble. Maybe you're right. Maybe he'll send a sign. There's the only way to know for sure. Your father has to send you a sign claiming you as his son. Sometimes it happens. You mean sometimes it doesn't? Annabeth ran her palm along the rail. The gods are busy. They have lots of kids, and they don't always... Well, sometimes they don't care about us, Percy. They ignore us. I thought about some of the kids I'd seen in Hermes' cabin. Strangers who looked solemn and depressed, as if they were waiting for a call that would never come. I'd known kids like that at Yancey Academy, shuffling over to boarding school by rich parents who didn't have time to deal with them. But God should have behaved better. So I'm stuck here, I said. That's it. For the rest of my life. It depends, Annabeth said. Some campers only stay the summer. If you're a child of Aphrodite or Demeter, you're probably not a real powerful force. The monsters might ignore you. You can get by with a few months of summer training and live in the mortal world the rest of the year. But for some of us, it's too dangerous to leave. We're year-rounders. In the mortal world, we attract monsters. They sense us. They come to challenge us. Most of the time, they ignore us until we're old enough to cause trouble, about 10 or 11 years old. After that, most demigods either make their way here or they get killed off. A few manage to survive in the outside world and become famous. Believe me, if I told you the names, you'd know them. Some don't even realize they're demigods, but very, very few are like that. So monsters can't get in here? Annabeth shook her head. Not unless they intentionally stoked in the woods or specifically summoned by someone on the inside. Why would anyone want to summon a monster? Practice fights, practical jokes. Practical jokes? The point is, the borders are sealed to keep mortals and monsters out. From the outside, mortals look into the valley and see nothing unusual, just a strawberry farm. So, you're a year-rounder? Annabeth nodded. From the collar of her t-shirt, she pulled a leather necklace with 5 clay beads of different colors. It was just like Luke's, except Annabeth also had a big gold ring strung on it, like a college ring. I've been here since I was 7, she said. Every August, on the last day of summer session, you get a bead for surviving another year. I've been here longer than most of the counselors, and they're all in college. Why do you come so young? She twisted the ring on her necklace. None of your business. Oh, I said, stood there for a moment in uncomfortable silence. So, I could just walk out of here right now if I wanted? It would be suicide. But you could. Mr. D's or Sharon's permission. But they wouldn't give you permission until the end of the summer session unless you were granted a quest. But that hardly ever happens. The last time, her voice trailed off. I could tell from her tone that the last time hadn't gone well. Back in the sick room, I said, when you were feeding me that stuff, ambrosia? Yeah, you asked me something about the summer solstice. Annabeth's shoulders tensed. So you do know something? Well, no. But my old school, I overheard Grover and Sharon talking about it. Grover mentioned the summer solstice. He said something like we didn't have much time because of the deadline. What did that mean? She clenched her fists. I wish I knew. Sharon and the Satyrs, they know. But they won't tell me. Something is wrong on Olympus. Something pretty major. Last time I was there, everything seemed normal. You've been to Olympus? Some of us year-rounders, Luke and Clarissa and me, and a few others, we took a field trip during winter solstice. That's when the gods have their big annual council. But how do you get there? The Long Island Railroad, of course. You got off at Penn Station, Empire State Building, special elevator to the 600th floor. She looked at me like I was sure I must know this already. You are a New Yorker, right? Oh, sure. But as far as I knew, there was only 102 floors on the Empire State Building, but I decided not to point that out. Right. After we visited, Annabeth continued, the weather got weird, as if the gods had started fighting. A couple of times since I've overheard satyrs talking, the best I can figure out is that something important was stolen, and if it isn't returned by summer solstice, there's going to be trouble. When you came, I was hoping... I mean, Athena can get along with just about anybody except for Ares, and of course she got the rivalry with Poseidon. But I mean, aside from that, I thought we could work together. I thought you might know something. I shook my head. I knew I could help her, but I felt too hungry and tired and mentally overloaded to ask any more questions. I got to get a quest, Annabeth muttered to herself. I'm not too young. If they just tell me the problem. I could smell barbecue smoke coming from somewhere nearby. Annabeth must have heard my stomach growl. She told me to go on. She'd catch me later. I left her on the pier, tracing her finger across the rail as if drawing a battle plan. Back at Cabin 11, everyone was talking and horsing around waiting for dinner. For the first time, I noticed that a lot of the camelers had similar features. Sharpened noses, upturned elbows, mischief smiles. They were kind of kids that teachers would peg as troublemakers. Thankfully, no one paid much attention to me as I walked over to my spot on the floor, plopped down with my minotaur horn. The counselor, Luke, came over. He had the Hermes family resemblance, too. It was marred by the scar on his right cheek, but his smile was intact. Found you a sleeping bag, he said, and here, I stole you some toiletries from the camp store. Couldn't tell if he was kidding about the stealing part. I said, thanks, No problem, Luke sat next to me, pushing his back against the wall. Tough first day? I don't belong here, I said. I don't even believe in gods. Yeah, he said. That's how we all started. Once you start believing in them, it doesn't get much any easier. The bitterness in his voice surprised me, because Luke seemed like a pretty easygoing guy. He looked like he could handle just about anything. So, your dad is Hermes? I asked. He pulled the switchblade out of his back pocket, and for a second I thought he was going to gut me, but he just scraped the mud off his sole of his sandal. Yeah, Hermes. The winged-footed messenger guy? That's him. Messengers, medicine, travelers, merchants, thieves, anybody who uses the road. That's why you're here, enjoying the Cabin 11's hospitality. Hermes isn't picky about who he sponsors. I figured Luke didn't mean to call me a nobody. He just had a lot on his mind. You ever meet your dad? I asked. Once. I waited, thinking that if he wanted to tell me, he'd tell me. Apparently he didn't. I wondered if the story had anything to do with how he got his scar. Luke looked up and managed to smile. Don't worry about it, Percy. The campers here, they're mostly good people. After all, we're extended family, right? We take care of each other. He seemed to understand how lost I felt. It was grateful for that, because an older guy like him, even if he was a counselor, should steer clear of uncool middle schoolers like me. But Luke had welcomed me into the cabin. He'd even stolen me some toiletries, which was the nicest thing anybody had done for me all day. I decided to ask him my last big question, the one that had bothered me all afternoon. Clarice, from Ares, was joking about me being Big Three material. Then Annabeth twice, she said, I might be the one. She said, I should talk to the Oracle. What is that all about? Luke folded his knife. I hate prophecies. What do you mean? His face twitched with a scar. Let's just say I messed things up for everybody else the last 2 years, ever since my trip to the Garden of Hesperides went sour. Sharon hasn't allowed any more quests. Annabeth has been dying to get out into the world. She's pestered Chiron so much he finally told her he already knew her fate. He had some prophecies from the Oracle. He wouldn't tell her the whole thing, but he said Annabeth wasn't destined to go on a quest yet. She had to wait until somebody special came to camp. Somebody special? Don't worry about it, kid. Annabeth wants to think every new camper who comes through here is the omen she's been waiting for. Now, come on. It's dinner time. The moment he said, a horn blew in the distance. Somehow I knew it was a conch shell, even though I'd never heard one before. Luke yelled, 11 fallen! The entire cabin, about 20 of us, filled into the common area. We lined up in an order of seniority, so of course, I was dead last. Campers came from the other cabins too, except for the three empty cabins at the end. And cabin 8, which had looked normal in daylight, but now started to glow silver as the sun went down. I marched up the hill to the mess hall pavilion, satyrs joining us from the meadows, naiads emerging from the canoe lake, and a few other girls came out of the woods. And when I say out of the woods, I mean straight out of the woods. I saw one girl, about 9 or 10 years old, melt from the side of a maple tree and come skipping up the hill. In all, there was maybe 100 campers and a few dozen satyrs and a dozen assorted wood nymphs and naiads. At the pavilion, torches blazed under the marble columns. A central fire burned in a bronze brazier the size of a bathtub. Every cabin had its own table covered in white cloth trimmed in purple. 4 of the tables were empty, but cabin 11 was way overcrowded. I had to squeeze onto the edge of a bench with half my butt hanging off. I saw Grover sitting at table 12 with Mr. D and a few satyrs and a couple of plump blonde boys who looked just like Mr. D. Chiron stood to one side, the picnic table being way too small for a centaur. Annabeth sat at a table 6 with a bunch of serious-looking athletic kids, all with her gray eyes and honey-blonde hair. Cloris sat beside me at Aerie's table. She apparently gotten over being hosed down because she was laughing and belching right along with her friends. Finally, Chiron pounded his hoof against the marble floor of the pavilion, and everybody felt silent. He raised a glass. To the gods! Everyone else raised their glasses. To the gods! Wood nymphs came forward with platters of food. Grapes, apples, strawberries, cheese, fresh bread, and yes, barbecue. My glass was empty, but Luke said, speak to it. Whatever you want. Non-alcoholic, of course. I said, cherry coke. The glass filled with sparkling caramel liquid. Then I had an idea. Blue cherry coke! The soda turned a violent shade of cobalt. I took a cautious sip. Perfect. I drank a toast to my mother. She's not gone, I told myself. Not permanently, anyway. She's in the underworld. And if that's a real place, then someday... Here you go, Percy's, Luke said, handing me a platter of smoked brisket. I loaded my plate and was about to take a big bite when I noticed everyone getting up, carrying their plates towards the fire in the center of the pavilion. I wondered if they were going to dessert or something. Come on, Luke told me. I got closer. I saw that everyone was taking a portion of their meal and dropping it into the fire. The ripest strawberry, the juiciest slice of beef, the warmest, most buttery roll. Luke murmured in his ear, burnt offerings for the gods. They like the smell. You're kidding. He looked, warned me not to take this lightly. But I couldn't help wondering why an immortal, all-powerful being was like the smell of burning food. Luke approached the fire, bowed his head, and tossed a cluster of fat grapes. Red grapes. Hermes. I was next. I wish I knew what god's name to say. Finally, I said, whoever you are, tell me, please. I scraped a big slice of brisket into the fire. When I caught a whiff of the smoke, I didn't gag. It smelled something, nothing like burning food. It smelled of hot chocolate, fresh-baked brownies, hamburgers on the grill, and wildflowers, and a hundred other things that shouldn't have gone well together, but did. I could almost believe the gods could live off that smoke. When everybody had returned to their seats and finished eating their meals, Chiron pounded his hoof again for our attention. Mr. D got up with a huge sigh. Yeah, I suppose I'd better say hello to all you brats. Well, hello. Our activity director, Chiron, says the next capture of the flag is Friday. Cabin 5 representatively holds the laurels. A bunch of ugly cheers rose from the Ares table. Personally, Mr. D continued, I couldn't care less, but congratulations. Also, I should tell you that we have a new camper today. Peter Johnson. Chiron murmured something. Percy Jackson, Mr. D corrected. That's right. Hurrah, and all that. Now run along to your silly campfire. Go on. Everyone cheered, and we headed down towards the amphitheater, where Apollo's cabin led us sing-along. We sang camp songs about gods and ate s'mores and joked around, and the fun thing was I didn't feel that anyone was staring at me anymore. I felt that I was home. Later in the evening, when sparks from the campfire were curling in the starry sky, the conch horn blew again, and we all filed back to our cabins. I didn't realize how exhausted I was until I collapsed on my borrowed sleeping bag, my fingers curled around my minotaur horn. I thought about my mum. But I have good thoughts, her smile, the bedtime stories she would read when I was a kid, the way she would tell me not to let the bedbugs bite. When I closed my eyes, I fell asleep immediately. That was my first day at Camp Half-Blood. I wish I'd known how briefly I would get to enjoy my new home.